Cool, yeah. Oh, good evening. My name is Mike here, recovering addict.
Hello,
yeah, it's good to be here and everyone on Zoom. Hello. Good to hear you, Joe. Good to see you also, man. Yeah, I love Joe. Joe's excellent, man. I love her. And yeah, thanks for asking me, Stephen, to come and share, man. Never shared here before. And I don't get to come up here much. I don't get to come up. I work in the city, well, West End, but I don't get to come up this part. And I parked my car and I saw a queue of people. They were queuing. I think they were waiting for food or, and it was a reminder, actually, just that reminder about how it used to be for me, actually, how it used to be. And I'm always full of gratitude for this program and to be clean and so forth. But that, you know, just getting out of the car, I just had a sense of, you know, huge amount of gratitude. And before I got, I prayed for every single one of those individuals there that, you know, what that whatever they're looking for, what they hope for will come up for them, you know. And I'm a firm believer in that, for praying for people. And so I'm very grateful to be clean and be alive and be here with you guys, you know. And it's and I love Narcotics Anonymous. I love it. It's it's given me a new way of life, a new way to live. And and as the reading will say, it's only through understanding and application that it works, right? So I've got understanding, I've got to apply it. This is what you said. So I just can't just come here and sit down and listen to people share and, you know, go away and, you know, listen to share tapes and, you know, read a little bit of literature, quote literature. It's not just about that. I've got to apply it. That's what it talks about in the literature, you know. And, you know, I've been blessed, and I'll probably talk about it a bit more. I've been very blessed through the pandemic and, you know, to sit on Zoom and meet so many amazing people, you know, Joanne being one of them as well, meeting so many amazing people. But I ended up getting set up with a group of guys who, the predecessors, who've been around for donkey's years. You know, clean time does matter, actually. mine does. Shit, you know what I mean? You know, I hope people say clean time doesn't matter. Well, it does matter to me, actually. You know, because I'm very grateful to the predecessors that walked before us, actually, because I get to hear a lot of their stories. They talk about not having any literature when they first came around. I'm sure we've heard all the stories. And I get, and these group of guys, I sit with them every Wednesday, and it's like 11:30 p.m. UK time, and it's evening time over there for them. We just sit down, we go through the Living Clean book, and I get to hear a lot of stories that they've gone through, and, you know, how NA first started for them, and they did all that kind of stuff. And one of the things that has always stood that they've shared with me, and I, you know, you only keep what you got by giving away. People take what they want, leave the rest behind, it's tied up to you. They told me, with clean time, you're in danger. So they said to me. The second thing they told me, that the danger is we become close-minded. That's when you're in danger, when you become close-minded, you know. And, you know, and those two really stood out for me. Really stood out for me, you know. And I guess when they were telling me, it wasn't in a way to scare me. It was the fact that that's a reality, and that's how they see it. And I really took it on board, actually, you know. And I'll tell you what it was like for me first, you know, before, and then how I got here. I think that's important. And then, you know, and then I'll tell you about recovery. I like recovery, you know. But, you know, like most of us here, you know, I reached here a very very broken place, you know. I always share this. Where I grew up in East London, Hackney, Clapton, and my world was very small, very, very small. I lived, it was in this estate, Rents Park. Occasionally I drive through it sometime. My mum doesn't live there no more. She moved there about 7 years ago, 8 years ago. But I sometimes drive through, okay, just to kind of just drive around, just because it was where, in a way, it's where I got cultivated. It's where I kind of grew, and that's where my life started, really kicked off for me. And, you know, I remember, like, they used to have, like, these blues parties in these estate, in my estate. Every so often, they have these parties, every, like, different parties every weekend. And, you know, as a kid, I was 14, 15, I'd go up there and, you know, and interact with these blues parties. you know, the stench of marijuana will be coming through, and you know, guys will be dancing with women, and you know, the music will be blaring, and alcohol will be there, and you know, and it's at that time I started realizing that once I had a drink, I felt a bit active. I could start asking women to dance with me and so forth. I felt very lubricated, you know, and that kind of progressed, actually. That progressed really quickly, because before, after that, I was, you know, smoking marijuana. I couldn't roll it. I couldn't roll joints. You know, my mate used to roll it for me. There's this arcade place on Upper Clapton High Road. It's called Myers. And I used to go in there with my friends, and, you know, we used to play the arcade, you know, Space Invaders. Showing my age a bit now, I'm not that old. Space Invaders, you know, and the old pool and things like that. And the local criminals used to come in. They used to be really smart with all the, snakeskin shoes and the Farrahs and the Gabichis. Yeah, you know, yeah, look, Ricky, you know, yeah, Ricky, you know. And they would come in, and these guys looked so attractive. I thought, wow, they had all the gold and the onyx. And my mate, one of the guys who owned the arcade took my mate under his wing and basically got him to start selling for him, you know, marijuana. And I remember we used to go to my friend's house in the evenings after the arcade, and we'd sit in his house and we watch things like Scarface and, you know, smoke the joint. It very fastly progressed to one day him saying, look, in this bag I've got cocaine, and we were just mimicking what the guy was doing on Scarface. Before you know that, we were smoking crack. It's all over. And, you know, for those that know, you know, it just brought me to my knees very, very quick, very fast. And the reason why I say the estate is because it's very significant to me, my estate. And I tell you why. Because I didn't ever come out of that estate only to go to the high road. So my world in Upper Clapton is just where I lived. I didn't come out at all. I never ever come up here. This is the New Year's Eve thing. I'm not going up there. I'm staying in Clapton. I don't need to go nowhere. Do you know what I mean? I'll do the New Year's Day here, you know? And the only time I came out of there is when I went to prison. So I go to prison, and as soon as they let me out, I run straight back to Clapton, back to my state. And that was it. And that was my world. And I was too frightened. See, that the drugs have took a big hold of me now. And I, you know, the way I used at the beginning, it changed. It became really rapid. So I needed money, you know. Where am I going to get money? So I just started attacking my home, man. I started clearing out my home, you know. And my mom, she just lost control. She knew something was up. She said, you know, they've cursed you from Africa. Something ain't right with you. What's going on? She didn't know what was going on with me. And neither did I. And there was a group of us, and we just all did the same thing. And what I'd done, I discovered a way. I don't know how many people live in my estate, you know, but I discovered a way to burgle people's houses in this estate. I discovered it where if they came to the front door, they would have known someone had been in. And that's what I'd done. I started targeting in my estate, and it just become prolific. And all the time, I'll get caught, go to prison, come back out. And when I was in prison, I remember opening the Sun newspaper, and then I would see, you know, they used to give the £1 trip to Spain. And I'd look at the £1 trip to Spain and just look at it and think, I'd love to go to Spain. I'd just start fantasizing about going to Spain. That's what I'll do. Nothing else, you know. And while I was in prison, you know, it's a bit like what Joe was sharing, you know, I'd just run around looking for drugs, you know. If I couldn't find drugs, I'd look for other things to take my mind away, if you know what I mean, you know. It's just to change the way I feel. You know, I look for other things, you know. And I remember one, and because it became so rapid, going in and out, I lost track of time. The years just ticked away. Just ticked away. It just became, I remember walking when the sweatbox pulls up outside Pentonville, you've got to walk out, and they've got the kind of like, the reception, they call it. And I had just been discharged 2 days ago. And I go back in, and there was this Ghanaian prison officer. He looked, and he said, he was confused, and he wasn't. He said, but you just got out 2 days ago. He said, you just got out 2 days, and you're back. But just like him, I didn't get it. I just thought it was the drugs. I didn't understand, you know. And so that was it. Then one day, what happened, I went to prison, spent some time in prison. I think I'd done about, God, I can't can't remember, I'd done about a year on remand, and I eventually came out. And something, because what happened, the same guys I was using with in my estate, they never came to see me, by the way. They never came to see me. I didn't get no introduction to NA, there was no H&I, whether they were there back then, I don't know, but no one came to see me, you know. And I didn't think I was an addict, that's for sure, you know. But I remember coming out of prison, and I remember going back into my estate, and they changed. This is no word of a lie. They'd changed. They had these nice cars, they had all jewelry, you know, things. I was like, wow. One of the guys I grew up with, he kind of got involved in some kind of cartel and started introducing these guys to start selling drugs. So they put down, you know, the what we were using. They were doing a bit of dope, but they got into the clubbing. They started taking MDMA pills, champagne. And I thought, wow, I'm going to have some of that. I thought, I'll have some of that. This is me. I've arrived. So my friend, he laid on something for me, and that's what I thought, let me go and try my luck. The long story short, I was running away from him because I owed him money. You see, what it is, these guys are different from me. They were completely different from me. They were completely, completely different. And I kept thinking I was like them, that I could use successfully like them. And each time, all it ended up with me going back into prison, you know. And I got called these outcast names, which I'm not going to read. All these outcast names. So I felt very isolated, and I ended up being a loner. It was just me, my drugs, and I. That was it. I'd been kicked out of home, and, you know, next thing you know, I'm in night shelters, and that was it. That was my life, you know. Finding ways and means to get more. That was it. And then, you know, again, I will say thank God to H&I, because then I ended up going into prison, and I heard about Narcotics Anonymous. I thought, let's give it a go. I had to get to this prison where they ran a rap program. So I had to get there. Sorry for mentioning, but they ran a program. I had to get there. So, we're very resourceful. And I managed to swing it, and I ended up getting there, which was great. Ended up being there. And I ended up going in a group. People were sharing my story. I started laughing at people sharing my story. Because I was so deluded, I didn't feel I was an addict. I mean, I was gone, I was messed up. But I didn't believe I was there. I would go in prison and tell people I was in there for, like, what, you know, fraud and just pure rubbish. And I remember them giving me my life story, and I just lied in the life story. I just couldn't be honest with you guys. Incapable. Full of so much shame and hurt. Because if I told you the truth, I wondered that you might do to me what my friends did to me. So I just lied and lied and lied. And I stayed clean for a bit, came out into the community, stayed clean for a bit. Eventually, boom, I was gone again. I was gone. This time, I did some geographicals, which, you know, it's not important because we know what they are and what that means. But the beauty is that when I came back for one of the geographicals, I went into this day program, these community day, and I saw some guy I was in rehab with. I mean, this guy had a Rolex on, he looked smart, because my eyes really focuses on these things. He looked smart, he was working in his job. I said, did you stay clean all this time? He said, yeah. He said, stay clean. So I knew it worked. You see, so that was the evidence. It talks about in the literature, we look for the evidence. There was the evidence. I've seen someone that I was in rehab with stay clean and now working in their life. And I said, I want some of that. I want that. It was attractive to me. You know, and I stayed with it. You know, relapsed here and there. Then eventually, you know, I got to this day program for the probation services, and, you know, it was a day program, and I just started, I digged in, and I saw these steps, and I always remember lying in that life story, and I made a decision. I said, I'm going to find a sponsor, and I'm going to be completely honest with that man. I remember that it was a Chelsea meeting in one of the nurseries. I made that commitment. I said, I'm going to do it. And that's what I've done. I asked the first guy to sponsor me. He said no. Then I asked the next guy, and he said, yeah. And we was on our way. I was in a crappy hostel in Kilburn. You know, but all I did was went to meetings every day. I just went to meetings every single day, you know. And you remember my world was very, you know, was in this estate, you know. Now my world started to get a bit bigger because I started to get to different meetings and I started to meet people, you know. I met Paul in my first 6 months, 5 months. I think like 4 months I met Paul. Went to Birmingham. I started to meet people and my world started to grow. You know, it's that Welcome to Narcotics Anonymous, you know. And we went through the steps, we went on a journey, me and this man. And he was fairly new as well, bless him, you know, he's still clean today as well. He was very new as well. And he did the best he could with what he had, and we went through the steps, and, you know, we did it thoroughly, man. I remember my fourth step, I spent hours in his house. He lived in Camden, I spent about 8 hours, man, in his house just reading, like, tired, of like, please, it's gonna stop now, you know what I mean? You know, like, please, man, you know, but it paved the way. The problem is what happened? I did all this stuff, and this one I said about application, understanding application. So, I mean, our literature is so powerful if we listen to it and read it. I tell you, because what was happening, you see, I had gone through this work, right? But the behaviors are still rife. The behaviors were still rife. You see, what it is, I was still up to a bit of fraud. But then eventually I put it down. I was driving without no license. Then eventually I put it down. And my sponsor said that to me, because as time gone, you're going to end up putting that. Either you're going to be in a bit of pain or you're going to put it down. And that's what happened. I got in a lot of pain and then I put it down. I met a woman, you know, who I'd known for many years. We had a relationship together. We split up and we got back together. And even then, there was I was a bit one foot in, one foot out, so to speak. I went through the work several times after that. You know, I went through the work several times. Doesn't matter where and how. I remember I was about 9-10 years clean. I was working in these community drug services. Because remember, I told you, I saw the guy, I said, I want what he had, innit? I told you, I said, I want, and I started working in these places. Financially, you know, I felt that I needed more money. You know, it wasn't enough, you know. I decided I'm going to put on parties. 9-10 years clean, I'm going to put on lots of parties. And that's what I did. Bless you. And that's what I done. I started putting on loads of parties. And these parties were dangerous parties, like really dangerous. Not the fact that there was drugs and alcohol. Yes, that was dangerous. But there were some guys with guns and crazy guys in there. Really crazy, crazy people coming in these parties. I said, I need more money, yeah? And what I said to myself is, what I'm going to do, I'm going to go to these festivals. I'm going to sell laughing gas. And that's what I did. I started going in these festivals and selling laughing gas in these festivals. You name them all. Love Box, you name them all. I did them all. And I wouldn't pay to go in. I'd sneak my way in dishonestly with canisters. I'm talking loads of laughing gas. Me and my brother, seriously, you know. And that's all I do, be selling them. And the greed, the money, and what it was, I loved it. The women, oh, you're right, the name of my nickname, you okay? I loved it. It's money for the grace of God I didn't use. I'm telling you. And then something happened. I did a party, I never forget, right? And on the underground, these guys, these gangs were gonna rush it and all this rubbish. And it happened, actually, they came. And I remember me and the other two promoters, a female and another guy, we was in the toilet hiding, shaking with the money there. And I thought, I can't do this no more. I can't do these after parties, I can't do it no more. And what also happened, I was going through the work at the time as well, and what happened, the connection to the God of my understanding started to get a bit more deeper. And even so, then it started getting more. The conscience was pricking hard and I had to let go. And I had to practice on faith. The program talks about it. We have to practice faith, you know. So I let go of it, all that financial security. I thought, you know what, I'm going to just go for it. And just go for it, you know. And that's what I done. And it was okay. It was okay, you know. Financially, I was okay. I recommitted to the program and, you know, really got stuck in. But just before the pandemic, I don't know how long I've got left, just let me know, so. Okay, cool. And, I tell you, it's only for the grace of God I didn't use that. When I reflect back on those days, you know. But during the pandemic, you know, I got this kind of promotion in this workplace, you know. And, you know, I used to give this manager a hard time. you know, I used to give her a really difficult time in there. And I wanted to always start my own business. I always wanted to do it, but I was just too afraid. Because the fear of, what if it goes wrong? What if it goes wrong? What if it goes wrong, you know? And just before that time, I was really big. I was like 18 and a half stone, you know. You know, when you come and you start eating, innit? Food, you get. I loved it. I started eating, man. You know what I mean? I loved food, boy. And then, and I remember, you know, the doctor saying to me, he said, like, I was drinking loads of Red Bulls as well with those parties. I was trying to stay up. Sorry, I got to say, I was drinking loads of, it was like 10 Red Bulls a night. Honestly, it's crazy, so I could stay up. It's like using, isn't it? Really, isn't it? And the doctor said to me, my blood pressure was through the roof. And he said, look, he goes, listen, you just got to lose weight. He said, you got to lose weight, man. He goes, I don't want to put you on medication. So just exercise. And that's what I've done. I started running, but I started running obsessively. I started doing marathons, half marathons. I went crazy. I went through the roof, exercising twice a day. I joined the gym. You name the class, I was in it. I was in it constantly, like a nutter. You know, and I'll get up early in the morning and I'll go to the gym and then train and then whatever, come back. And I lost all the weight. I lost it. Gone. You know, went. And what happened? You know, the pandemic, I mean, I stayed slim for quite a while and, you know, still relative. I'm still slim now. Still battle with it, I ain't gonna lie to you. I'm gonna be honest, still battle with it. But people used to say, the thing is, when you lose weight in general, people say, are you okay? Are you sick? Are you using? You know, like, are you using, like, you know? I got all that, you know what I mean, you know, and, you know, it's crazy, isn't it? Because I think the same thing when I see people when they lose weight as well. It's crazy, isn't it? So I understand it, you know, so. But the way my disease had just kind of gone into so many areas, man, it just went a bit crazy, from the fact from money to exercise, you know, went crazy. And so anyway, in this job I was in, that, you know, I remember the pandemic was starting to kick in now, and they were talking about it. It was kind of see. I remember running, and I was watching it on the screen, and it was just kind of kicking off in China. And I thought, okay, it's not coming here. I'm not bothered. And then I remember talking in this organization, and then during that time, I was planning to work for myself, and I kept, you know, fear. You know, fear is serious, man, because I kept putting it off. I said, they wanted to give me sabbatical, and I said, no, I'm going to do it this month. They said, take sabbatical. I said, no, I'll do it next month. And I kept putting it off. Before you know, the pandemic's come, and they said, look, forget your sabbatical. Just stay with us. Help us through this difficult period, because it's going to be really rough, X, Y, Z, with the pandemic. We need your support in this organisation. I said, no problem. My in-laws had been living with me for a year, and It was a beautiful time, but it was a difficult time. I mean, we gave up our room for them and we moved downstairs because they're elderly. Their house was getting done. We didn't anticipate it being for a year. We thought it'd be for a month. It ended up being for a year. And what I was doing, I was actually working in private practice as well, but also working in this organisation. And my time would be like from 5:30 in the morning, I'll get up, and I would end up getting home like 10 o'clock at night. I'd still be doing meetings and things like that. The point I'm trying to make is that I wasn't present at home. I wasn't present. And I had this difficulty with this guy in this organization. We had our little run-ins. And this particular day, up to this moment, I can't remember what he said to me. I can't remember. But I ended up, I mean, we're talking about a massive office with professional office with people sitting, like, loads of chairs, nursing. It's a professional environment. He said something to me. I got up and I chased him round the office to throttle him. And I remember people saying, Mikey, stop. And I just ignored them. And I ended up throwing the water bottle at him. It was crazy. People held me back. And then I ended up sitting on my desk and I sat down. And I thought, what have you done? What have you done? And I just got up and I left. And as I was driving home, the manager called me. He said, Michael, don't come back. don't come back, you're suspended, don't come back. And then, the pandemic came, and then there was a lockdown. And then I got fired up again. I got fired up about this program, man, because I knew I was in a bad way. I got fired up about this program, and I hooked onto Zoom, and, a person that we probably all know was started this international meeting, and I got involved in it heavily from the beginning. Got a service commitment and really got plugged in. Big star. Got a sponsor, new sponsor. And through the journey from my sponsor, I met these guys. And we went, and when I met these guys, we went through the steps again. And what they said is, are you willing to go to any lengths? There's women in this group, by the way. There's women in this group. Yeah, there's about seven of us. It's not me, it's just going through the step writing, and we're reading it, you know. And I thought, I don't know about that. There's some women, I don't know how honest I'm going to be. I'm going to be honest. But I said yes, because the willingness was there. And that's what we done. We went through the work. We went from 1 to 12. And what happened is that, I remember I was saying, like, I was still blaming that guy because I got suspended. I was blaming him. Then I remember one of the women in the group, she said to me, she goes, Michael, it was your fear. It was your fear that did that to you. And it hit me. It was your fear. Your fear of not taking that sabbatical allowed that to happen. It's not because you were angry. It was your fear, you know. And I remember going through the work with these guys, and it gave me a new insight into the program, about what this program is really about. Because, yes, I knew it, but I didn't know it, if I'll be honest with you. And it gave me a new understanding about what this was about, actually, what this program was about. And I remember I remember when we got to the 12th step, and I cried. And the reason why I cried, because I thought, that was it. I wouldn't see these guys again. I got so much from them. And we went quiet for a week, and then they messaged me. They said, Mikey, we're going through the Living Clean. Do you want to come on board? But these are the times. And I thought about it, and I thought, you know what? Any lengths, I'm going to do it. And I jumped to it. And this is when my program took a new turning, because I went into this literature. And by the way, what they also told me is that the basic text is the least read literature today, actually. Mm. So, it's a reminder for us that maybe we might go back to it, the basic, I don't know. But anyway, and when we went through the Living Clean, it opened it really up for me, actually, because I started to realise, one of the main things that hit me, you'd be surprised, I don't know if anyone's read the Living Clean, but it's a part of it about growing old. And I had a spot on my face, and it was bothering me for a while, and I didn't know what it was. And I thought it was cancerous, and I started Googling, what we do sometimes. And then I went to the dermatologist, and the guy just looked at me, he goes, look, mate, he goes, you're getting old. These are old age, marks. And the next day I had the Living Clean, and we get old in here. We get old. You stay clean, we get old in here. You know, bit of aches start happening. I'll talk with the pool just now, but little aches. But these things are serious, you know. And then we started looking at relationships and what relationships really mean, you know. And I looked at the relationship with my wife. And I realised that sometimes I've been with this woman for nearly how many years now? Coming up, 17 years I've been with her. And I can still be deeply avoidant from her. Deeply avoidant. That she wants connection. And I still find it hard to get vulnerable with her. You see, I can get vulnerable with you guys easy. It's not a problem. You see, what the relationship part is talking about. It's not necessarily me talking about me getting relating with you guys and getting vulnerable, but can I do it in my home with my daughter? My daughter suffered a panic attack the other day, and all I want to do is just fix it. I find it hard to say, okay, babe, let's talk about this. What is it? Talk to me about it. And when I try to, because I haven't done it in the past, it makes it so much even difficult. And this is not about giving myself a hard time. This is about reality. This is how it is. You know, and I realized that, you know, the beauty of when I've been going through this book is that, you know, I've started to grow. Because I've become a lot more aware about how deep my relationships really need to go and how they need to be, actually. And that this is a complete journey. It just, you know, it doesn't just happen overnight. You know, this is, we grew. And when I listen to these guys, you think, because they've been around like 35, 38 years, 40 years, you can hear that this doesn't happen overnight. This is a process. Again, it talks about in our literature, this is a process, you know. This program, the steps, you guys, and the God of my understanding, has transformed me in a miraculous way. It's indescribable. You know, I have a stepson, and, you know, I came into his life at the age of 14, 13. And it was a very difficult, you know, he's 13, and, you know, even though I've known him from when he was 2, he doesn't remember me because I was in and out of his life. So now I'm new again. I've got to, again, start to build a relationship with him. And, you know, I've seen him grow from going to secondary school to college, to university. And then in the car, you know, he's planning on getting married. You know, he's I'm going to get married. And, you know, and in the car, we're going to get his suit, right? We're going to get his suit. And you know, we drive up to the John Lewis and he tries on his suit. And but before that, my wife is saying that he's going through some financial stuff. Can we help out? I said, no problem. So he tries on his suit. And I had to, this is good to, you have to speak to people in here. Not always, if it's not just, and sometimes the God of my understanding is the skin, is you guys actually. Is you guys. And I remember, you know, talking to him, sitting there with my son, and he's trying on suits. Now the illness is active now. Which one is he going for? What suit is he going for? Is he going? He tries on his Hugo Boss one. I said, no way. I said, no way. No, this is, I'm in my head now. I'm in my head. And I'm going, I'm watching him. He's trying on suit. And his mum's saying, yeah, it looks good on you, Nathan. I'm saying, does it? I'm thinking, I'm sitting there. And then my friend calls me. And then I share with him about what's going on. Goes funny, but this is serious. This is my head. I don't want to part with this kind of money. Yeah? And I'm talking to him. And he says, Michael, just enjoy the moment. What a beautiful piece of message is that, eh? Come on. Priceless. Some of the stuff we get, you can't even get in the literature, what you guys share with me, but the literature is important. He said, just enjoy the moment. And that's what I done. Took a picture of him. Look smart. All good, you know, all that. And then we're driving home. Guess what he says to me as I'm driving? I said, who's your best man? He goes, Michael, I want you to be. Blew me away. But for me, if I come from a captain, me. He said, yeah, you. And that's why I was the best man, you know, went up there with the rings and, I want to get it right, don't want to let him down. And stood up there and, you know, gave the rings away and so forth, you know. I do my best to be a parent today. I do a damn good job, man. I do a damn good job. How did I learn it? You guys. You guys. Through the literature, through state sponsorship. You guys. This is no formal education or anything like that. It's for you guys. You know, and I remember we used to have these kind of we don't do it as much now because he's left home. You know, my daughter's in university. But we used to have these family meetings. We say, come down, let's talk about anything that's bothering you. I learned it from here. I learned it from you guys, you know. And where am I at in my recovery today? How much of time I got left? Just like, no. Okay, bless you. Where am I in my recovery today? So we're still going through the living clean. I'm still working it, you know, And I told you that I wanted to step out and run my own business. I do it today. It's a successful business, I would like to say. Very, very successful. And I work hard. But this comes first. This comes before anything. And when I say this, this encompasses the God of my understanding as well. You know, I try my best to give back as much as I can, as much as possible. And I guess the thing that still remains the same is the fact that, you know, like, I can't stay closed-minded in here. I've got to be open-minded. So people ask me to do a share, and I think, you know what, I don't really want to do it, but I come up and turn up and do it, you know. And that any length is still there, you know, that any length is still there. And trying to be a, like I told you, like my distance from my wife, you know, it's getting better. I mean, it's not great, but we're in marriage counselling, and I'm able to be really open and honest in these sessions about how I feel, and she's honest about how she feels. My business partner is my wife. Yeah. And I've had to learn, because I want to be the boss. See, my ego kicks in. But she has one as well. She wants to be the boss. So we have a lot of arguments about who makes decisions. So again, I pick up the phone. I speak to someone. And they give me some clear understanding about business. They say, Michael, there only can be one individual that takes the lead in the business. But you know what you have to do? Set a time away from your home in another environment and discuss it. Bingo. Solution. Because every single time I rely on my own thinking, it just goes completely wrong. I always think it's the best time now to broach something with her or to talk about something. I always think now is the best time. And you know what? It isn't. It isn't. What I've realized, sometimes I need to check out my thinking first before speaking to her. Or anyone, actually. I had to make a difficult decision the other day. And sometimes, you know, having uncomfortable conversations are very difficult. It's not my strong forte. And again, I lined it all up. I didn't check in with her, what I was going to do, you know. I just lined up. And I've met this person in Zoom. I'm going to have this uncomfortable conversation with this person. And I'm talking. Guess what happens? I don't do it. It goes left. I don't finish off what I was meant to do. And then I sit down and tell her, she asks me, she goes, did you do what you had to do? No, sorry, I was telling her what I'd done. She goes, but I'm meant to be there. You didn't tell me about it. What's going on? You should have shared this with me. You should have, you know, should have involved me. Did you tell her, by the way? No. It gets up in a bit. I guess what I'm trying to say here is that in all circumstances, in all times, it's important that I'm speaking to people about everything, whether it's my wife, about the business, or you guys about recovery. Simple. I've got to keep, because my thing is, let's go back to the beginning in a minute. I told you when I came out of prison and those guys had changed their lives around, and well, whatever they've done, they changed their lives around, yeah. And they'd be calling me these names, you know, the derogatory names, because I didn't fit in with them. I became a loner. So I became used to looking after Michael, for Michael. So I relied on my own thinking, and sometimes I can still do that today. So it's so important that I speak to my sponsor. When I called him for a while, he'll crack a joke, but he says, do you remember your sponsor now? So you remember me, you know? And I try not to call him when I'm in crisis. I try to call him just to say hello and how things are going, even though I've got nothing to say. Do I like calling my sponsor? No, I don't like calling him. I don't, you know, I don't really like it, you know. But I guess what I've learned to do here is do the things that I don't like doing, you know. Face the things that are difficult. Face all the challenges, you know, and reminding myself that it's just a day at a time, you know, and that regardless, I still need to keep coming back here, because this is where the foundation lays in everything for me. Because people say, and I'm going to finish on this, people say it's not about the using. Yeah, I hear that. But I can still use anger. I can still use fear, pride. I can still use lust. Listen, it weren't too long ago, yeah, about 6 months ago, thank God the obsession was removed. There was these two girls in the gym and they became my alarm clock. And what I was doing, 5 o'clock in the morning, I knew their times. I knew the times they would be there. And in the morning, I'd get up and I'd go to the gym. And what I'd do, I'd use on them, just looking at them, and I'm running on the running machine, obsessing, and I'll be getting a hit. And when they've gone, it's like the crack had run out. When they'd walked out, it's like the drug had run out, and I stopped running. And I prayed and cheered for that obsession to be removed. It got removed. I mean, I see them today, and it's fine, you know. And but that's how powerful this illness is. If it, you know, it doesn't come for me with a drug straight away. It'll come through those other avenues. And then eventually, that's where it wants me, using in the gutter. it's a privilege and that you have allowed me to be here to share. Thank you. I really appreciate that. I'll leave it there.